Hello and welcome to the Ship Shape Podcast, a series of podcasts where we meet amazing people and talk about their experiences, personal, technical, and all related to the maritime world. Come and dive in. Dive in. Dive in.
You're listening to part two of Voice of the Oceans.
Before the days of YouTube and everything, so you guys were like,
Actually, on this trip from 97 to the year 2000, we did educational program, which we transmitted with the internet from the boat. And it was actually one of the first expedition ever to do that back in the days in 97. So it was incredible. Parents did that. It's really incredible. I was actually very able to keep up with them and see where they were.
Very cool.
So when they finished the second trip, they said, okay, we want to do something, you know, third trip, we want to do something special, but I think we got to try to decide and try to structure, see what we're going to do. So they just started doing corporate workshops with sailing boats in Brazil, which became really popular. We were the pioneers to do that in Brazil. So we had big corporation coming in with sometimes even 200 people, and we would hire, you know, 9-10 boats and do sailing corporate, which was usually 2-3 days. So it was an incredible business for them as well. And they were living at the time in Ilhabela, which is basically the capital of sailing in Brazil. It's really nice. There's a sailing competition every year. You get probably about 160 boats, you know, together. And so it was a really nice place for them. And in between that, there was a project that they were, there was this friend of ours who was sailing with us. And that my dad said, you know, there's 11 World War II submarines sank on the coast of Brazil.
World War II submarines?
Yeah, submarine from the German submarine from the World War II.
U-boats.
And he said, I think, yeah, U-boats. There was, I think, 9 from Germany and 2 Italian, and nobody has ever found them. And I thought, oh, really? Said, yeah, and there's this interesting book, which this, you know, it's a writer wrote of these things from Florianopolis, an incredible story about one that sank just off the coast of Florianopolis. And my father read the book. Wow, it's an amazing story. He said, yeah, why don't you try to find it? My father said, oh, we are not, you know, researchers, and we don't have any means of doing this. But that kind of, you know, there was a bug that bit him, and he started looking into it. Start talking to me and to my mom and say, maybe we should try to find the submarine. The story is incredible. So to make the story a little bit shorter, we ended up deciding to go and search all with volunteers to search for this World War II submarine. It was called the U-513. That was the
hull number.
The hull number. And it was about 40 miles away from the coast of Florianopolis. And so we said, okay, we need a size catch sonar, right? But we didn't have the money to buy a new one. So I started looking, and I ended up finding one online selling in the Philippines for these people that they had a diving operation, and they were searching for ships for the diving operation. They managed to find a few, and they decided to sell it. So I ended up sending it to Boston to Fisher, who makes the sonar, and they stacked it out. I flew to Boston, learned how to operate the sonar, went back to Brazil, got the sonar back in Brazil, and then we did a lot of research. We did research on National Archive, and because it was a plane, one of those seaplanes that actually bombarded the submarine, so it dropped the deep bombs, and then as soon as it hit, the submarine sank, and it was, I think it was 52 people, and there were 11 survivors. Including the captain who survived. So they, you know, they sent Barnegat, which was the ship that went and rescued these, which at the time they were the prisoners. So they rescued them. And the story is incredible. It ended up that they took them to Rio de Janeiro to be, you know, interrogated and all that, saying why, you know, because the submarines weren't being seen as far south as this was. So it was really incredible to see a submarine being all the way south, in the south of Brazil. So anyway, so we did a lot of research trying to see, and then we found this, all the logbook of the Barnegat, the ship that went to rescue them, and we saw all the positions where they went, and so we mapped that, and so we did after, you know, with we had professors that were helping us as well, and marine biologists, we had all kinds of incredible groups, and it was basically, I think, more than 4 years, we for 2 years we were going out with our boat, our previous boat, ISO, steel hull. We would go out with a side scan sonar, take us 8 hours to get out because it's 40 miles out, take the side scanner, look for the stuff, couldn't find it, go back because people were volunteers so they could only go on the weekend and the weather was bad. Mm. It was a learning process. Anyway, we ended up finding it. It was like a needle.
Wow.
So we ended up finding it after several years of going out, and we ended up taking it because it was very deep. It's 120 meters depth. So we ended up taking a ROV, you know, with a little robot, and it dove, and it and it's incredible. You can see all the guns and that. So we did a full motion documentary, which is coming out. For my father wrote a book that was published.
Love it. Keeping in the family. Was your brother doing the filming again? Or
yes, yes. So he was doing all the filming. So in between that, you know, they said, okay, we want to start a new expedition. And they read a book that it was called The 1422 or 23, the year that China discovered the world. It's a theory that the Chinese had sailed around the world before Magellan did. And this book was written by Galvin Mazes. He was a naval officer from the British Navy. And after he wrote the book, there was a lot of evidence start coming out supporting this theory. And so we said, okay, we sailed around the Magellan trip. Why not try to do the trip of, you know, Zhang He, who was the Chinese emperor who at the time sailed, you know, who was the Chinese captain who sailed the whole fleet theoretically around the world. So we decided to try to do the same trip he did. And then my parents said, okay, to do that, we would like to build a new boat. So they called me in 2011. They said, look, we're going to build a new boat. It's going to be want to start from scratch. And we want to see if you want to be part of it. And I was full on competition. I had just won my fourth world title in windsurfing. And I wasn't thinking of stopping anytime soon. And I said, okay, look, I'd like to do all the deck part of the boat and supervise that part in terms of the rigging and, you know, all the sails and everything. And I ended up getting involved in the construction in 2012. And it was a 2.5 year construction. We ended up finishing the sailing vessel cat, which is where I am now. In 2014, after 2.5 years, it was an incredible project. I mean, it was the first boat we were building. I always say, oh, that will be the last. But after you learn how to build the first one, I think the other ones become a lot easier because you know what not to do. But it was incredible. And we had ended up supervising all the construction, not only on the inside, but the outside as well. And we had the shipyard that never built a sailing boat before. They only built a fishing boat. So it was a real challenge. But they were really good with the steel. So the hull, they did all the welding of the hull. And then the interior and all the part of the rest of the boat, we set up two containers and then we had to form the team. It was an incredible experience. We didn't have the funds to build the boat of our dreams, but we ended up finding a way of building the boat of our dreams because we started looking for official suppliers to help out. And in the end, we had the first official supplier. One of them was Volvo Penta, came in with the engines. They gave us two engines. So a lot of companies started coming aboard. And in the end, we had 42 official suppliers. So it was incredible. So we had all the steel was given for free, the stainless steel, the deck, all stainless steel, our windows, the big windows, small Brazilian company. Now they are one of the largest suppliers for, you know, marine windows for these power boats and sailing boats. We had also, you know, our sales. We had a partnership with New Pride as well. They made a special deal for us. And then we started having basically all these official suppliers. We managed to get the cost down of the boat. And with the sponsor that came in, we would have enough funds to do the whole expedition, which the idea was to do a full motion documentary as well. We had our monthly TV program coming on Brazilian television. And then we did, in the end of the expedition, we did a 11 series of 45 minutes each for Nat Geo, which ended up going to Europe and then Latin America. So it's a really incredible project. And so it took us this trip, which was our last trip, took us 2.5 years to complete. And we did the coast of Brazil. We went south, the coast of Brazil. We went to Argentina and then we crossed to Antarctica. Incredible experience. And then back to Chile, across the Chilean Channel. Then we went to Easter Island, Rapa Nui. And then we went to the French Polynesia again. We always go to French Polynesia. I have many friends there, so it's nice to go back there always. And then from French Polynesia, we went to all the South Pacific Islands, then New Zealand, Australia, Papua New Guinea. And then when we were sailing from Papua New Guinea, we went to an island between Guam and Papua New Guinea, which is called West Payu. Nobody lives there. It's a small atoll, and you have probably about 150 yards of this beach, and you have a small lagoon that you can go in. It's not on the charts. You can see it on the charts, but it's not detailed, so you cannot actually see if you can go in to the pass or not. But with the satellite picture, we saw there's probably we would be able to go in. And our sailing vessel is very unique. When we build it, we have a lifting keel, so we can actually, our draft goes down to 17 feet when the keel is down, and when it's up, we only have 7 feet of draft. So imagine in very shallow water. So we went to this atoll called West Fayou on our previous trip, and we went ashore and like, wow, this is paradise island, one of those incredible islands. And we had seen the plastic pollution build up, you know, during our previous expedition, each time more and more. And when we were on this island, we went ashore and we were simply shocked. The whole island, the beach was covered with plastic. And that was a shock for us. So we decided to, you know, put everything in our dinghy, take it to our boat, and we have a compacting machine on our boat. So we have a lot of already on the, when we build a boat, we build a lot of sustainability. You know, we're really concerned with the sustainability side and also with redundancy. So in terms of sustainability, we had two organic green gardens for spices on the back of the boat, which is very unique. You can see that usually on
the sailboat. We have to talk more about that,
Yeah, Eric is the one who takes care of that. It's incredible. Actually, you open it, you know, we have a bunch of spices, really nice. We had the compacting machine, which for us is really a game changer. We can compact up to 80% the volume of the trash. When we were there, we used this compacting machine to do a beach cleanup, and we filled our dinghy, I think, like 6-7 times, especially single-use plastic bottles, you know, cutlery and things like that.
And was it coming from like the beach side, or was it the ocean pushing it up onto the beach?
Just the ocean pushing it up. I mean, this is in the middle of the North Pacific. There's nobody, you know, it's very remote. Yep. So just with the currents. Yep. So we did a beach cleanup. We did this, and then we filmed. At the time, the going viral thing was just starting. Did a video on YouTube. We posted it on YouTube, and we took it to Guam, took it to a recycling center, and this video ended up going viral. We had like 3 million views and shares, and it was like, and a lot of people ask, oh, what are you guys going to do about it? And we're like, well, you know, we were really shocked. We're sailors. We're ready. Everybody, sailor has that conscience, already trying to do as much as they can. And I said, look, but my parents said, we want to do more. So that was kind of the seed that was planted for the Voice of the Ocean, the expedition we are now. But going back after Guam, we ended up going to Japan, and then we went to Shanghai, where actually the first Brazilian boat to sail to Shanghai. It was an incredible experience going up the river. It was one of the, I mean, this is the busiest port in the world. Like, so dense at night, you know, you're sailing thousands of ships. After that place, I said, well, you can sail anywhere. You know, a lot of people ask, what's the most dense you ever been on? I always say it's been, one was a storm that we got, which I'll tell you about afterwards, the second storm. And the other one was sailing through the coast of China and Shanghai, because the amount of fishing vessel and ships, it's so intense that you cannot, you know, rest for a second. Yeah. And then from Shanghai, we went to Hong Kong and then Vietnam. From Vietnam, we went to Borneo, then eventually to Indonesia, and then from Indonesia we went across the Indian Ocean again, and then we went to Mauritius, Reunion Island, and then South Africa.
And at this point, you're already more aware of the trash situation, right? So, like, as your this final leg is happening, like, how is that?
The first time we got impacted and we saw. Something that really stood out for us was on the second trip, actually. I wasn't aboard, but my parents were sailing with my brother through Henderson Island. And, I mean, that's far away from anything out of the coast of Chile. There's nothing there. So they went ashore, and they start seeing these funny little colors on the, you know, on the beach. And it's like a rocky beach. And they were like, wow. So they went to sea, and these funny shades that they went to sea, and it was plastic. And this was back in, this was 97, 98. And that's the first time that they said, wow, in the middle of nowhere, in 98, it's getting plastic pollution from, you know, wow, how can this be here? Which was amazing back then already in 97. And then, of course, during our expedition, which was called the Orient Expedition, after we sailed from China and we sailed off in the Indian Ocean, we passed through places. A lot of people say that, you know, you have the garbage gyros and patches. Mm-hmm. We like to say they're more of highways. We crossed highways. So there were lines of trash, and you're sailing, and then you cross these lines, and then sometimes you have probably, you know, a little bit less, and then suddenly you have a mouse as far as the eye can see of trash.
Wow, because of the garbage just sort of gathering stuff together. Wow.
And we were sailing through these we're on the coast of off Indonesia, already in the Indian Ocean, and we sailed for about 6 hours nonstop. There was not one single moment where you wouldn't see plastic in the water. There was shocking, really shocking. So then the seed of Voice of the Ocean, which started in West for You, started growing. And of course, we didn't know the name. We didn't know what we were going to do, our next project. But that's where it basically started growing. So we ended up arriving back in Brazil. After Santa Helena, we sailed back to Brazil. We arrived in Brazil in 2016. Mm. So it was an incredible expedition. Finished the expedition. And then my parents sat down and said, look, we want to start our fourth trip around the world. We want to leave a legacy, though, because we have lived on the ocean and the ocean has given us so much. Mm. And we want to sail again, you know, around the world. And we want to do a project that, you know, initiative that could not only, because we are good storytellers. You know, we are not scientists, you know, we are not marine biologists, but we have that communication, which is really good, especially back home. And now, you know, we're going in, especially back home, but internationally starting as well. And we wanted to share what we saw and what we would see on the new expedition with people about plastic pollution. And not only showing the, you know, plastic pollution, but also showing the solutions people are finding in different places. So when we arrived back in Brazil, my parents and the whole team, we would like to say, you know, family, we gathered scientists, we gathered students, we gathered marine biologists, we gathered all kinds of different people and trying to see how we could come up with an expedition, an initiative that we could, you know, share this information. And Voice of the Ocean started. So we like to say that we are basically a startup, but with 38 years of experience, you know, And then
it's a powerful name. Where did the name come from? Voices of the Ocean.
Yeah, well, basically, because we wanted something, because in Portuguese it's Voz dos Oceanos. We wanted something that not only, because we wanted to share people's stories, that they are doing incredible things in different places. So we said, well, you know, everybody can be the voice of the ocean. Everybody can have that voice, because, you know, we see a lot of people saying bad things here, bad things there, but not really showing the solution that people are doing. So we wanted to kind of tap into that. We said, okay, we want to bring the voices where people cannot be heard, you know, bring that voice to the person, and they can be the voice of the ocean. And so we started the trip. Now it's going to be over a year, the coast of Brazil. It got postponed. We had planned to start just after the COVID started, and we took the boat to South Georgia, actually to the Falklands Malvinas. We took the boat down. It was going to be basically our last trip testing the boat before we started this expedition. And we decided to sail the boat, Eric and I, about 1,800 miles. We took the boat and we were going to have 11 friends fly into Malvinas, meet us. And then we were going to sail to South Georgia, which is just off the peninsula of Antarctica, spend 30 days there and then come back. And when we were sailing, that's what I said, the two things that scared me the most, that this was one, we got into a really bad storm. We were about 50 miles out, about 250 miles out. We saw this low pressure developing, and we knew it was going to be very fast. It was going to, you know, hit us. Mm. Over there, you have our friends coming every 36 hours. Mm. We said, look, I don't think we're going to make it. And we're 50 miles out of Malvinas, Falkland. We got hit by force 12. We had 84 knots of wind. And
how much? 84?
It was 84. Yeah.
And but you're on this vessel now, right? How big is this vessel?
It's an 80-foot sailboat, 80-foot steel boat. So she's really strong. Our lifting keel, when she's down, she has four locking pins. So she has 18 tons of lead, 14-ton bulb, so all the structure is 18 tons, so she's very stable. But, and I was really glad that we were actually on this boat, because I'm sure if we were on our previous boat, we got two waves here that we would have capsized for sure. We had several waves, but two of them, one ripped our bimini apart, then the stainless steel that holds the whole bimini bent like it was a toothpick, just like 90 degrees. Mm.
How'd you figure out the mast problem from the last boat? How'd you circumvent that this time?
Oh, we all the swages, the expert, they saw how it got pulled off, you know, and that's why on this, when we built this boat, we said we wanted a boat that is like our forestay, for example, is 26 millimeters. I mean, some people look at that and say, my God, our D1s as well, the interforestay as well, 26 millimeters. Like, so the boat was super well built. I mean, the heavy boat, she's 88 tons, but she's super, super solid, which, you know, and especially for a case like that, we felt really safe to be on it.
Yep.
But yeah, we had, so the storm lasted, usually over there, you have front that passes every 6 hours. They pass very quickly, and, you know, the weather changes a little bit. And this low pressure came and stood right on top of Malvina's Falkland for 3 days.
Oh,
and
boy.
3 days, it was the longest 3 days Eric and I think, ever been on, you know, it felt like it was a month, and for 3 days to do 50 miles, just sitting there, the clue from the jib just pulled out totally, just ripped out. So we put our mainsail, which was started, you know, ripping some parts. So we put the mainsail down after the second reef. Then we had just the third reef on the mizzen and one of the engines slowly just to keep, because the current was like 3 knots. So we just want to keep the boat stable. So it was very nasty. I mean, we were just, I saw seas where I thought I would never see in my life. Colossal seas. Things that sometimes you see in the YouTube videos of ships, you know.
Yeah.
And it was nasty. And the only thing that really brought us smile was looking out and seeing the albatross flying. It was incredible. They're like, you know, 60, 80 knots of wind, and they're out there just having fun. So for 3 days, the wind stayed between 50, sometimes would go down to 45, 50, and then it would go up sometimes to 60, 65. When we had, just as it came in, it was 4 knots of wind, so it stayed between 70, 84 for a couple of hours, then that afterwards stayed about 60, 50 knots. Eventually, we made it to Falklands and Malvinas, and when we anchored, port captain started talking to us, and then he ended up becoming a good friend, and he was about to retire, and he said, look, I've been here since 82, and I only seen a weather system this bad twice in my life. I
And you had heard firsthand, yeah.
And I mean, as a windsurfer, I love weather forecast. I'm very thorough, you know. I have all the apps. I always, you know, every 12 hours I'm looking at it. But this is one of the worst places you can sail when you're coming either from Brazil or from Argentina, because there's nowhere where you can hide. Because, for example, the Drake, when you cross the Drake, you go after a cold front, and you cross the Drake, it takes you 3-4 days, you can have a fast boat, you know, even a little bit less. So we crossed the Drake, when we crossed the Drake, it was fine. But when you go in 1,800 miles, and you're, you know, right there, there's basically nowhere to go. So it was a mess, you know. But anyway, eventually we managed to arrive, get the boat ready in 4 days, and 11 people came aboard. And in 13 people, we sailed to the South Georgia, where we spent a month. It was incredible, one of the prettiest places I've ever, I think, been to in terms of, you know, just incredible wildlife. There's a beach you go down, and there's like a million penguins. And, so it's amazing. And then that's a nasty one is coming back to Falklands Malvinas as well, because you usually come back against the wind, and it's 800-mile trip. And but then, you know, we saw some friends coming in. We managed to dip down almost all the way to Antarctica. We actually went halfway between Antarctica and the coast of South America. And then the front passed on top. And then we tacked, went up. It took us, usually takes you about 8-10 days to get back. We did it 5 days. So. And then we were about to go back to Brazil. And start the expedition. And then the pandemic came. So the people that were aboard, they left to Brazil, and my father stayed and said, look, I'll sail with you guys back to Itajaí, to Brazil. And just then, the pandemic started. My brother said, man, all the ports are closing. Uruguay's closed, Argentina's closed, don't come. So we ended up staying there 4 months, Erica, myself, and my dad. And we ended up staying there. And it was incredible, because we managed to do a lot of walks in West Falkland, Malvinas. Nobody lives there, hardly. You know, there's like 200 people only. And in the town, town of Stanley, there was 3,000 people, but it was, I think, one of the only towns in the world that actually didn't have any COVID cases. It was we spent a good time. But then winter started coming in. We said, okay, it's time to leave. So we left, went back to Brazil. We decided to wait for the pandemic to see what would happen. Eventually, things start, basically getting better. And then my brother said, okay, we managed to get things going. Because my brother now, he's the CEO of the Sherman Company, Sherman Protection, we call it. He's the one who takes care of all the business back home. And so we ended up starting the expedition. We did a 7-month refit, putting a few things that we thought it was very important on the boat. And then we started the expedition 1 year ago in Brazil. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So we did the coast of Brazil. We did all the coast of Brazil. We went to the Amazon River, which for us was impressive as well. We did 60 days inside the Amazon River. We went all the way to Santarém, which is about 300, 400 miles inland. It was pretty impressive. Mm. So, it was a new experience for us. We had seen, we've been to the ice, we've been to a shallow reef, but we had never seen huge logs of trees that come floating that just fall from, the side of the river, because the river was the rainy season. So the river is constantly, dragging these trees that are being eaten up through the movement of water. And it's a natural process. So you see big trees fall down and they just come floating and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Move out of
never
here.
Seen that before. But so you guys must be like, the amount of times you've gone around the world, you'd be running out of new things to look for perhaps by this point.
There's always new. For example, then we went to the BVI, the BVI to the Bahamas. Bahamas as well was really shocking for us because we stopped in Great Inagua. Paradise, the island's the paradise, but it's the first island to windward where it receives all the current from the Caribbean, right? So we went to this beach on the other side, the leeward side, we went to the windward side, and it's a 30-mile beach, very long. And we arrived there, we rented this car, and we were looking for the flamingos. We wanted to film the flamingos, and we got there, and we were shocked. The amount of plastic trash on this beach was so much that probably in less than 20 feet, you would fill up a truck load of trash. And that was in Great Inagua. That was really, really impressive. And this is, it's just trash that comes with the current floating from all the Caribbean, or basically all over the world, and it gets dumped there. So it was really, really shocking for us. But the thing with the Voice of the Ocean is that we've seen incredible initiatives, and some of the initiatives that people can replicate in other places, and that has been really inspiring. I mean, it has been shocking the amount of plastic pollution we've seen, but it also has been really inspiring, the Voice of the Oceans. People wanting to change and people having this attitude and say, how can we help? How can we change? Mm-hmm. And, as what we said, everybody can make a change. So, and you said, you have to go, you're running out of things to see. But for us, we had never been further north than Fort Lauderdale with the boat. We had been to Cape Canaveral, the furthest north we've been. So for us, it was incredible here in this U.S. part of the trip. We did Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and then we sailed to New York, which was an incredible experience in New York. We went to Boston. From Boston, we went to Acadia National Park, Maine, and then we sailed all along Maine all the way to Kittery. And then from Kittery, eventually, we came here for the boat show at Newport. And here in the U.S., we've been seeing some incredible initiatives as well. We were, for example, in Boston, we did a lecture at MIT Sailing Club, and they having, incredible with students that came aboard, and they having this incredible initiative with that micro and nanoplastic that they are doing, trying to basically bring awareness and also try to reduce the way consumers are dealing with the plastic in their everyday lives. So, we've been seeing incredible things, which is really inspiring for us.
Well, I certainly love the name of Voice of the Ocean, because after the 30 years you guys have been doing it, you've built up quite a voice, right? You have a ton of people that know about you and follow you, which, at the core of it, I feel like the problem with a lot of this, ocean innovation is just creating awareness. Not a lot of people get to experience the ocean or necessarily get to see all the things that are happening. So, it's a fascinating position to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we feel exactly that. Like sometimes people are way inland. They said, but I live inland. I'm not doing the inclusion where I live because I'm living in it. But 80% of trash, the plastic that comes to the ocean, you know, comes from rivers. So sometimes, you know, your footprint's way down inland. You know, it's what we said, like, you can reduce so much, especially the single use, like, you know, plastic bottles, things like that, cutlery, straws, and it's just little steps that people can make that can really make a change. And for us, what has been really inspiring has been also, we have the, you know, scientific pillar, we have the art pillar, we have educational pillar, we also have an innovation pillar. And one of the innovation pillar was, we had this company, very traditional company in Brazil, and they wanted to support us, but they said, look, we don't want it to be something like greenwash, because we still do a lot of plastic, you know, we use a lot of plastic in our packing, but we want to change, but we don't know how to. And we said, look, we can help. So we partnered with a business called Series Business from Holland. They're a Dutch company. And they basically go into the company and they do a scan. And in this case of this company, a Brazilian company, they're also based in the US. They did a scan of 3,000 items and they saw how they could reduce their plastic footprint, and it has been incredible. It's like 4 months now, and the amount of single-use plastic that they have been able to reduce, it's been incredible. And the whole company is changing. They have a huge warehouse and factory also in Houston, and Eric and my mom, they actually went there to visit, and the whole attitude of the factory itself, how they're dealing with the single-use plastic and how to, you know, what we can recycle, what we can eliminate, and it has been incredible. And a lot of the companies, you know, around are looking into that and saying, wow, we can change. And we believe it's not now people have an option, but in the future, it's not going to be an option, because there's so many overwhelming results coming out, scientific proof of how plastic pollution, you know, the nanoplastics are going into the bloodstream. You know, they find that almost every human has a bloodstream, has plastic, nanoplastic on the bloodstream. And there's so many evidence coming out that pretty soon in the future, it's going to be, you know, we have to do this. It's going to be really radical, because you're not going to have an option. So we still say that people still have an option of, you know, change for the better now, because otherwise, afterwards, it's going to be too late.
So just as a sort of final conclusion thought for me, I was wondering, since you've got like these 30 plus years, you know, and like a whole family heritage with the ocean, what are just some of like the trends that you might have seen changing over these last few decades? Like, again, like, one is obviously increasing trash and our awareness of it. What other trends have you seen?
Yeah, I think the weather has been really a lot of changes in the weather. Seeing that, I mean, you know, we see it in everyday's lives, but we've been to places where actually we have seen them. We're in Indonesia. We had a friend that he said, well, you know, I used to have he has a small house that's right in front of the sea, and the sea is just advancing each time more and more. So we see back home as well, we see a lot of weather patterns that has been changing. And it's really shocking, like the amount of change that we've seen, especially on the weather, has been for us something that it has been a shock. Like a lot of people said that here back in October, sometimes you would even have snow back in November, you know, start getting freezes and stuff like that. And now simply doesn't happen. So yeah, so the weather for us has been one of the major impacts. And then I still think that we, as a sailors, you know, we still have that feeling of adventure. So we cross a lot of people when we're sailing our path, share our experiences. And we see a lot of new sailors wanting to, you know, do as much as the best as possible. So for example, now each time with the technology as well has been incredible in terms of solar power, wind generator, hydro generator, they're getting more and more efficient. We see a lot of people nowadays, they'd be able to ride 100% off the batteries, just of the solar panels. So we see a lot on that side of the innovation as well. Here on the boat show, I saw a lot of electric engines coming out for not only inboard engines, but outboard engines as well. So we're seeing incredible changes on the side of technology as well.
I was just going to ask, you're already on your, fourth trip around the world? What are your next future plans? Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, so the idea is we go to Bermuda. We leave probably next week. We head to Bermuda. And then from Bermuda, we go to Miami, we have to pick up our mainsail, make it the new mainsail, and then we sail to Mexico, Mexico to Panama, and then Panama, we go across the channel, and then we go to Cook Islands, Galapagos, and then across the South Pacific, and then to New Zealand. And then we take a small break, between 3 and 4 or 5 months in New Zealand, especially because hurricane season, cyclone season in the South Pacific. So this would be next year, exactly 1 year from now, to arrive in New Zealand. And then Voice of the Ocean would have another 2 years to go, which would be doing the Asian part and also the Indian Ocean. And then afterwards, we plan to do another 2 years. So it's another 4 years in total forward, going to Europe and eventually maybe back to the U.S. and then down to Brazil to complete this six-year cycle. But the Voice of the Ocean, the idea is not only to, for example, now, yes, we're focusing on the plastic pollution, but the idea is to spread, is to bring plastic, not only plastic pollution, but awareness about, you know, ocean pollution and different things that we've been witnessing. And that's something that we're doing now on the expedition. We're looking at different things. And if the idea is that the boat carries on, I stop, I don't know, you know, everybody, my parents can stop, we don't know. But the idea is that the Voice of the Ocean Initiative carries on forever. So that's why we kind of took the Sherman name down. We always were known as the Sherman family, always was Sherman. The logo, our logo was Sherman. And we took that down, and now we have Voice of the Ocean because we want something, you know, that's going to be a legacy and it keeps going forever.
Awesome. So as we wrap this up, where can people find out about you and hear more about what you're doing?
Yeah, our webpage is voiceoftheoceans.com, so people can access that. And if you have a lot of information, then there's the link for all the social medias. So yeah, Voice of the Oceans right here, Voice of the Oceans with an S at the end, .com, so people can look into that. Also, if you're going to get in touch, people can get in touch. And yeah, my idea is to, you know, try to bring awareness as much as possible and keep sailing and making our, you know, better life for our ocean.
Awesome. Well, that was an absolutely fascinating story. I feel like I just listened to a movie.
Yeah, seriously. Like an action thriller. A little bit of comedy thrown in. Yeah.
Right? Well, we could spend a few hours here. There's so many stories. But I'm sure we can do it another time. Another one.
Love it, Wilhelm. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your experience and adventures with us. And definitely keep us posted and our listeners. And wish you the best of luck with all your
future. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure. Yeah, hopefully see you guys again. Thank you.
This show was sponsored by
Boat RX.
Imagine it's the dead of summer and you're on your boat sweltering. Hell, you might even have that air conditioner running. But what about that nasty generator noise, huh?
Boat RX, an industry leader in highly efficient air conditioning on yachts. We produce power from a variety of sources when and where it's available. Whether that's with energy-dense batteries or high-power alternators, an efficient air conditioning solution can change the whole boating experience.
Your solitude or family gatherings won't suffer from that loud generator noise anymore. Get ready for summer. Check us out at www.boatrx.com.
Welcome back to the Ship Shape Podcast. Check back every Tuesday for our latest episode. And be sure to like, share, and subscribe to ShipShape.pro.